Okay, I think we're good to go. So
great. And Mark, while you were gone, Mary Alice had asked if someone else joined, and someone else did join. So, who else joined us?
Oh, my name is Agu.
Azu?
Oh. Agu.
Great. Ah. Well,
we're going to go ahead then and make sure that Mary Alice has a chance to share with us what she's looking to share. And then at the end, if we have some time, we'll love to make sure that anybody else who joins us has a chance to introduce themselves. So Mary Alice is, as you have already read, is definitely a seasoned professional. She's based in New Zealand, as she had indicated. And what's wonderful is I think she's going to be a nice international perspective, that the collective harvesting of stories and the practice I thought was a very interesting article or a piece. And so, Mary Alice, let's turn it over to you.
Thank you. So, hello from New Zealand. And currently in my life, I actually live as an intentional nomad, so I don't actually have a home base. I am mostly in the year moving around from group to group and from organization to organization and context to context, but I like to come back to New Zealand about this time of the year, especially when I'm hearing about things called polar vortexes and stuff like that. It's nice to come back to New Zealand in summertime and have a bit of time to just relax, rest, recharge, and do all the maintenance it takes to be on the road most of the year. And I became an intentional nomad in 2004, actually, when the landlord sold the last place I'd been living, and I just followed my internal storyline, I guess, which told me to put everything in storage and get ready to move. So that's been my practice now for some time, and I find that it gives me a really interesting perspective on the storylines we're living in and living into, because when you're part of a society, you tend to disappear. You know, you become the fish in water. You don't see the story you're living in. So I find one of the things that is perhaps a purpose I don't have on my website, it's my role is to turn up and kind of witness different places in the world and bring the stories from one place to another. So I'm a story catcher. And I catch stories in one place and I take them to the place where they're next needed. That seems to be one of the roles I perform in an organizational context, in a community context, and in the groups I come into. So that's a kind of interesting thing. And Collective Story Harvest has grown out of the practice of Art of Hosting. So if you look at artofhosting.org, you'll see this group of people all around the world who are in the practice of how do we create conversations that really matter? How do we help people step in with each other, create wise action, and really listen to each other and work well together, which has been a prevailing question of mine as I've been traveling. You know, how much is enough? How do we live well together in this world? And, you know, how do we pursue that, especially in an organizational context, which has a different kind of storyline most of the time than public good? It's about how do we make a profit? How do we stay in business? And some of the storylines running there are challenging for people. But if I look at where this whole thing came from, two colleagues and I were in Brisbane in Australia a couple of years ago, and we were with a group of people who were the heads of all of the state public sector organizations. So the person who had invited us to this lunchtime meeting was the head of Disability Support Services. There was somebody there who was the head of the prison system, the corrections facilities. There was somebody there who was housing, someone from education. And they were all on a learning journey together. They were spending about 9 months on a learning journey together. And so we came into this space and she said to us, so what do you want to do with the group? You know, one of those, woo. We have an hour and a half. What do you want to do? So we decided we would tell one of our huge practice stories. We would tell of Columbus, Ohio, I guess, which is, done an interesting thing. It has been in the inquiry of how do we provide optimal health for everyone in Franklin County. so unusually enough for the U.S., a question about how do we provide health care for everyone. And they've been in this inquiry for about the past 12 years. So it's a massive story of a community context which started out from a medical point of view with the Medical Association, really holding this question and hosting this question for the community to step in with. So it's a large story of how do you make transition over time? How do you, as a community, stay in conversation? How do you encourage business and community and public service and all that stuff to step in together? So a really big story. But unusually enough for this particular meeting, we decided we wouldn't just tell the story. We would ask the participants to participate in the story in a different way. So the proper name of Art of Hosting is the Art of Hosting and Harvesting Conversations That Matter. So we just in that moment had a brainwave. Let's do some harvesting. Let's ask people in this group to listen to this story in a different way than we've done in the past. And we kind of looked at each other and went, okay, that's an interesting idea. And we decided on some themes we would have people listen for. We often now call them arcs. You know, what arc would we have people listen for? And we offered the group, hey, you know, we want to tell a story, and we like to ask you to be part of that by choosing to listen to it in a specific way. Not everybody said yes to that offer, but a few people did. And we really noticed the difference, the thing that happened when people listened for a purpose. I don't know if you've noticed this in groups you've been in. So often people, of course, everybody's impacted by a story. A story works on every person in their own unique way, but some stories kind of flow over people and, you know, my head was somewhere else, or I heard this bit of it, or I didn't hear that. But what we really noticed was what came alive in the group from and with those people who were listening for a purpose. And that sparked our curiosity and made us think further about this idea of how stories and listening sit together, and how if we ask people to listen for a purpose, we might be able to hear so much more possible in a story than we ever did before. And that was the genesis of collective story harvesting, and we've been playing with that now for a few years. And we've been trying it in large conference groups, 200 people listening to 15 stories simultaneously and then harvesting them together. We've had people sitting in groups of three harvesting and then coming back together in like a World Cafe format, sharing what they found out. We've had groups listen to one or two or three stories together as a group, and that thereby creating a story field and so on. But what began occurring for me is the interest and the desire to harvest systemic story on a bigger level. And a colleague of mine, Toka from Denmark, has been carrying the story that he heard long ago in his career, which came out of some people who were inquiring into the Danish education system. And it was the story of Denmark going bankrupt in 1813. And if you ask most Danes what happened January 5th, 1813, they will look at you in a very blank way and say, I don't know what happened, which is the day Denmark declared bankruptcy. And the interesting thing about this period in history is it's very, very unknown to most people in the country. They studied the Golden Age, which came on the back of this particular time period about 30 to 50 years later, but not this period, which actually set up all of the values that are currently held in the Danish society. And therefore, I found it really interesting what made my inner storyteller ears wake up, or stand up, I suppose, with this story was the potential of it. The potential of the story, right, a couple of years ago, we've now been working with it for almost 2 years now. At that particular point in time when I really became awake to it, we had a whole lot of shaking in the financial world. The financial crisis was rife. It looked like Greece and Spain and Portugal and other places would go bankrupt already. Iceland had kind of collapsed and actually had a unique story coming out of that. But I heard in this particular story of Denmark the possibility through story to awaken people to the idea that a crisis might be a good thing, that we are wasting a perfectly good crisis. And that hit me between the eyes like, whoa, I had not thought of that part of the story like that. And so that it was a story that could help the world. And then my second thought was, what would happen if Denmark itself became more aware of its own story and began to question one of its founding stories? So that really awoke me too to the idea of what happens when we question, when we play with, when we inquire into our founding stories, whether we're an individual or an organization or a nation. And we say, is this the storyline out of our founding story that's actually generative for us right now? Or is there something else we now need to pay attention to or bring life to from our own founding story that will help us to be the generative group we need to be? And that's how we began playing with the founding story of Denmark going bankrupt in 1813. This year, their Constitution Day is the 5th of June this year. For the second time, we'll be hosting a 3 or 4 day workshop open to people wanting to make societal change. And on the 5th of June, we will offer a different Constitution Day conversation than they traditionally have. We trialed that last year, telling the story of 1813 and inviting people into a citizen conversation, which is not their usual thing to do. Usually you go have coffee and listen to your politicians. As someone born in the States, I kind of went, why would you do that? But to involve the politicians in a citizen conversation is quite a different tact, and people responded incredibly warmly to the experience that they had and said, we used to converse like this, and we've forgotten how to do it, and maybe we should start again. So our plan this year is to create a conversation kit around this story, which has a wrinkle in it for 2014. In 1814, Denmark declared universal schooling the first country in the world to do so on the back of going bankrupt, because the king said, we might be poor, but we don't have to be stupid as well. Stunning conversation from somebody in a leadership position. So that's a little bit of a story about where Collective Story Harvest has come from. And my real interest is on these huge systemic stories, and the one I would really love to tackle, besides the U.S. founding story at the moment, which I'm a bit afraid of, is the story of the European Union, because it is a story of peace, and that's not exactly what's playing out at the moment. But what if it were? What if it were? So I see a power in looking at systemic story in a way that helps us all to be part of crafting the story that comes from this point. So I love it that people do PhDs and really go into stuff and become experts, but I think the power is in all of us working the story together and seeing what the positive potential is when we move from that basis of commonly held story into a positive future. So let me pause there for a moment. I think I've gone on for a bit, and just hear some responses for you or some questions or some guidance from my host.
Let's pause for a moment. Any questions?
Not a question. It's Jules. More of a comment. I found it very interesting that a lot of this learning came from a experience in Denmark, because when I was a college student, I worked very hard to get to Europe. I thought it was a good addition to my education. And I was pretty language challenged, so I was not accepted to a French version of the program I was applying to, and they sent me off to Denmark with a bunch of students. And what you shared is very much what I experienced with the Danish mentality, very ironic, and pretty in a good place to critique themselves. I think part of it is they're a small player in a very big pond all the time, and they are always willing to take a look at themselves with humor and, a good viewpoint. And just a tangent, I remember they had a concept of folk school, which is where you took a sabbatical as an adult and learned for learning's sake. And I remember a bunch of us students were all graduates and undergraduates, and you thought they were teaching us quantum physics because us Americans couldn't get our heads wrapped around the concept that that was possible in a country to do that. So I just wanted to weigh in and say I really have a lot of respect for the people there.
Yeah, the folk high school movement is one of the things that came out of that particular historical time period.
Okay.
And one of the places where we want to actually invite this conversation to happen, because they're uniquely positioned to do it. So thank you for bringing that in.
Tom hears. So I got a question, Mary Alice. When you talk about systemic story, are you exploring, like, all the different perspectives of a similar story before you even get to the arcs of listening of those stories?
No, how we've actually done it, and it's perhaps easier to understand when you look at an organizational context. So if you've seen the paper I sent, I also put a case study in there of an organization I'd worked with, so applying this to a team building experience. Mm-hmm. And that's, of course, a much smaller smaller system and about 50 people, easier to wrap your head around than how would a nation deal with this.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of exploring that as I go on. But when we did this team building, so let me just speak to that wee case study just briefly. David and Robin and I, David the chief executive, Robin, who is the practice manager, and I really sat down and said, okay, this is supposed to be a meeting that's about strategic planning, but what is it in your goals, in your vision, in your strategic statements, and who you want to be as an organization that we could attend to or strengthen by using this process? And so we combed through the vision statement, the mission statement, the strategic plan, the goals of the organization. David talked a bit about his own leadership and where he saw the organization taking a lead in its sector, which is a public service, supporting people who are on the margins of society, so a social services type organization. We talked about how people were really into their teams, which is often what happens in a distributed structure. People go, I love my team, but what the hell do the rest of you do? And besides that, what are our managers doing? I can't tell that they really do anything. And our communication is crap. That's usually the if you have a survey, that's a usual organizational survey. And we said it's really important for this work to create a story field that everybody owns. So instead of just owning the story of my team and my place and what I'm doing, could we create the field for people to own the Wesley Community Action story? So that was one thing we wanted to do. Secondly, there was a story in the organization that needed to be killed off. It had at one point in time wanted to get rid of a segment, and that was no longer true, but that part of the business was still behaving as if they want to get rid of us and be packing us sad, we'd say in New Zealand. So how do we kill off a story? And then how do we also invigorate people about the cutting edge stuff that the organization is doing with young people and specifically with gangs, having some very good track record on bringing rival gangs together to cooperate and learn from each other? So how do we make people aware of all of that work simultaneously within one storytelling? And we did that by dividing the story into three pieces, into the history of the organization, which gave us the radical nature of where the organization had actually come from, and people hadn't heard it as radical as it is. Secondly, the story of this part of the organization and, you know, kind of firmly killing off the storyline, but it isn't true anymore. And thirdly, in the part in telling the story of some of the cutting edge stuff that was happening so everybody could hear that. And we had chosen a series of harvesting arcs that would reinforce the place that the organization was seeking to go to. So we already had those created and asked people to step into them and step into them as cross-functional teams. Please be in a group harvesting with people you don't ordinarily work with. So there was the team building element at the same time. So it's a very strategic way of looking at how can story do whatever it is we're asking for, team building, awareness raising, creating a field where all of us are owning the same story rather than pieces of it, where we're getting quite strategic, where we're looking for where is the next wrinkle of invigoration to the into the system of who we are and who we're being through our storyline. So I'm wondering if that helps to answer your question, Tom.
Yes, thank you. It does. When you divided it up into three ways, then there were three tellers, and everybody listened to each one.
Yes. So how the structure goes is, there's a few things I've learned that are important. Number one is that, first of all, everybody needs to know what the process is we're going through, so that gets introduced first. people get introduced to what we're going to do and which are the arcs we're harvesting, and they're asked to pick one of those, and the teams work together before we ever listen to the story about, okay, so what are you really listening for, and how are you going to do that? How are you going to work together as a team? Who's going to do what? What materials do you need? Where do you need to be seated? How are you going to sit together? Where are you going to be? What do you need? So they have time to actually work together and decide what this really is. Then the story needs to be formally invited. So I introduce the tellers, I introduce the story, and I make a formal invitation, because something happens in a group when there is an invitation, rather than just, here's the people, let's get on with it. When we invite the story, there's a field for deeper listening that happens. And the third thing we've learned is it's really important to have witnesses. So this aspect of witnessing, really being there to see what happens for the tellers and for the people who are listening and in between us, and to report back on what happened in the field and the meta perspective, is a really different thing that people don't ordinarily do, but gives a whole, surround to this that makes it, you know, like we like often to think of story as sacred space. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But when you do it with intention, it can be, even in an organizational setting. The depth of listening, the depth of attention, the depth of hosting or holding the tellers and what they're doing, it can be really deeply amazing when it's set up well.
This is Genevieve Weller, and I'm from Chicago. What you're saying is really wonderful and really illuminating. I love it. I'm actually also wondering, you had talked about when you first started working with one group that some people said yes to the whole process and some people opted out of it. Do you find there are certain characteristics of people who say yes? And then what are the characteristics of people who say no, and are you ever able to work with those people and draw them into the process? Because it's such a process that sounds like it needs willing, open participants who are able to, again, creatively listen and let their guards down and engage, or else it's not a process that works. So it's kind of how do you engage the people who are reticent, or and also what kind of characteristics do you find in the people who are willingly open to this process?
I have to admit I haven't thought much about it, because there are only two times I can think of when people didn't participate. The first one, where we actually just made the offer, we didn't know what our structure was, so we didn't expect everybody to, and so they didn't.
Okay.
And the second time, when I was at a training, an art of hosting training that was, I think, 150 people, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so people went to hear different stories, and you know, we just, that's a matter for self-organizing. You can't force anybody into it. But in general, when we've really held and hosted this process well, people have all participated. They've done that in different ways. So when we have, we don't ask everybody to report back, but sometimes we've had groups do amazingly innovative report backs on their material. Sometimes people have, you know, done little sketches or poetry or any of. And we also say, here are the arcs we're laying out, but if you have a different talent, would you please bring it? So we've had harvesting from musicians. They've listened to the story, and then they've sung to us what they've heard or played us music. We've had, there's a woman in Minneapolis who harvests by gesture. So she makes a gesture to tell the story again and asks people to do that with her. It's phenomenal. The most harvest I've ever seen was in Plato. It was a kids' initiative we were harvesting in Australia, and we had some Play-Doh or kids' modeling clay, and one of the groups took that up, and they created a 3D representation or harvesting of everything they've heard, and then they invited us over, and they explained to us exactly what everything meant, which was incredibly content-rich. And not only that, they obviously had much more fun than everybody, and they did all of their work not by speaking to each other, but by passing notes. Here's what I mean by this, and then others could build on it. It was phenomenal. So, you know, if we can, we like to have other things with us, like musical instruments or whatever, so that people can feel free. Oh, and yes, I had recently in Chicago, I did a one-day story dojo, and somebody harvested there through yoga. She showed us the yoga postures that represented the story to her, and it was like, wow, why not?
You know,
everything possible, and it shows us a different aspect, and it helps people to think in a different way. We're so word-bound and paper-bound that sometimes these things are, and I can still remember a song that was in one of our first story harvests about the finance lab in the UK, studying how finance could actually be helpful for society. And we had a musician with us who sang a song to us at the end of systems must be redeemed, systems must be redeemed. I see it in my dreams, systems must be redeemed. I know, okay, so those things really stick with you over time. That's amazing.
Great,
and
thank you.
And it's lovely to ask people to step in the way that they can.
Yeah, and I would assume that people are also excited about the opportunity to do it differently rather than just the trust exercise or something. You know, it allows them to enter
yes.
a space they aren't usually given permission to be in before.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yes. And what happens, of course, as we know, stories keep working.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular, you'll see in my case study, if you read through that, we did the story. That whole process takes at least 90 minutes, but we kept unpacking it over the rest of these 2 days we were together. So what did you learn from our story harvest that will help your team to do the financial plan, the strategic plan better? So people went into their functional teams and unpacked there. Where will the story go from here? So people created the future story for the next 6 months. If we know that, if we actually have heard how radical John Wesley was in 1757, then how radical could we be right at the moment? Where does the story go? So, you know, you can keep unpacking what you learn out of something and keep going with it and keep uncovering. And I think that's the beauty of this kind of way of working when we all own it. It's not a team that goes away. I often think of teams, senior teams that go away and then come back with the value statements. It's like Moses came back from the mountain. Here's the two tablets. Take these and call me later. You know, I think those kind of things don't work well with human systems because we are living systems and we only really take on board those things we have a hand in creating. So if we have a hand in creating and co-creating our story, we're much more vested in it than ever before.
This is Mark. I want to make sure, Mary Alice, that you have additional time to finish and complete what you wanted to share with us, and then, of course, you know, we'll open it back up for questions. So was there anything else that you felt was relevant to share, building on what you already have?
Yeah, just the little case study of working across a variety of stories simultaneously. So in the document, I've done a little case study on a conference, the ALIA conference, the Authentic Leadership in Action conference, where we had somewhere over 200 people. We had 14 stories happening simultaneously, so the same process happening in smaller groups. We had the same arcs or the same themes being harvested over all of those groups with the major question of what do we know about making change for good? So there, our overarching question with this across a number of practice stories. And I think it's interesting to work with practice stories across a system that might offer different perspectives or facets of what's happening, what an organization has to offer. And where things are going well or not going well. So these don't have to be stories of successful, it's all peachy keen. It can also be stories of, you know, hey, this didn't work. What can we learn from that? So I'm opening the space for, instead of everything has to be perfect and we always have to get it right, that we could actually be in our learning through our stories together and make it possible for all of those stories to be grist for the mill and be useful. So I think we've, in corporate life, there's this real it's not safe to fail challenge, and we need the opportunity to share all types of stories in order for learning to happen. So it's an interesting thing to actually work right across a set of practice stories and then bring back what we learn out of all those stories. If we take the learnings out of each of them and really work with those, what can we see across our system that might be helpful and might take us more quickly to the next level? We often say we need to you know, reflect and learn from what we do, but often corporate structures are working fast enough that they, in fact, never do that. They never learn from what they are doing. They keep reinventing the wheel and suffering for it, actually, on one level, because there's not space to stop and reflect. And if you're a project holder, often being in a big project for a longer time feels a bit like being run over by a tank. You can't actually remember what happened. You forget the subtle learnings that might make all the difference. And having other ears listen to the story brings those back to the surface and makes a possibility for real learning. So I've really found the gift to the listeners and also to the tellers to be truly listened to, especially in something that's been challenging, is a real gift to people and releases something in the system which helps work to happen in a different way. So I think in this regard, stories are really, really valuable. And we tend to capture them as something that goes in the brochure. We're harvesting them for different things, but to actually use it as a group experience and to use it as a learning facet and a way to improve our listening for other stories that are happening that maybe aren't on the surface and aren't being seen is just a really phenomenal gift. And I've noticed how, I suppose, easily and well this very simple technique has been traveling. I'm just really grateful for people being interested in it. So I think that's all I need to say right at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mary Alice, this is Mark. I'd be curious to understand, you know, one of the challenges, especially here in the States, that happens is when you bring something like story into organizations is this longer-term buy-in or, you know, hopefully you have a aha moment experienced by one of the, you know, executives, preferably the chief executive officer. Can you share with us an experience that you've had where maybe, you know, a non-believer, if you will, has turned the corner and become a major sponsor or supporter at the senior executive level?
I don't know if I have one of those stories on board other than to say just recently I had was hired by P&G. I was in November and December, I was in Cincinnati, Chicago, and Madison, Wisconsin, doing a series of smaller workshops. And there were some people from the Clay Street Project, that's P&G's little innovation arm, who said, wow, we didn't realize that stories were so potent. And they invited me to come in and work with some of their Band 4 leadership. And we did a part of that. And then their corporate structure had something happen and we didn't complete it. But it's been interesting to me to listen to, just on the grapevine of other storytellers, I know how there seems now to be a resonance about organizational storytelling and more of an opening or an interest in it than ever before, which is quite fascinating to me. Often, you know, I can speak to people about story as knowledge management, if they want, if they need that. You know, how are you managing the knowledge that's in your organization? Stories are the holders of what we actually know and our process. I can talk about it from an OD point of view. I can talk about it from an efficiency and effectiveness point of view. You know, so what the interesting thing is, I suppose, is balancing this challenge of having it seen as a tool and using it as a tool and its flavor of the month versus this is something that's intrinsically human and it works with humans because that's the way we're wired. So we need to be careful about how we use it and respectful about how we use it. So I remember one process I was in where we collected stories through a hospital system. One of the senior surgeons was part of our meaning-making team. And it's interesting sometimes to collect stories and then have people who are in different parts of the organization step in and become the meaning makers, because you can ignore surveys, but it's harder to ignore people's actual experiences and stories. And he said, you know, I've learned more in this last 4 hours of listening to all of these stories and trying to make sense of them than I have in the 18 months I've been in the organization. I wish we'd had this earlier.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
So,
great.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, a surgeon is usually the prima donna in the system and not usually, and maybe he was being asked to be human for once. I don't know. Exactly.
That
but,
in and of itself is a story.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it is.
What
other particular organization had strong stories, so lovely.
What other questions does the group have?
It's Jules again, and bear with me. When you've approached the organizations, where do you typically start? Do you go directly to the C-suite, or are you working with the OD groups and HR? because when I've gotten feedback from people about my interest in moving in this, I have an OD background, I want to move more, people say, well, they're going to think you're a little quirky going after this, and I know about the effectiveness of working with storytelling, and I've been trusting it out on CEOs and CFOs in transition and other executive groups, and I've seen amazing things happen when, as you put it, humanize their experience and start to recognize how they need to connect on a different level than they had it before.
I guess it depends. I mean, I haven't, I'm not a big player in the U.S. market, so I don't, and I've been working really with people who want to take participatory practices into their work and into their environment. So I haven't done a lot of marketing or sales calls. I'm more following where the invitation falls for me.
Okay.
But I would take on board what the Appreciative Inquiry community says, go where the energy is. If you can find the place where the energy can move and is willing to work with you, that's better than trying to force it through anything or trying to convince anybody. I don't find that often works. But if I can prove to them, wow, something is happening over here.
Mm.
What did you do? I'm curious now. Like I often say that to activists, when you push against the machine, you are actually part of it. So why don't you go over there, have more fun than the rest of us, and we'll want to join you because people will be wondering what's going on. So I worked with a little team inside of IT in the Inland Revenue Department here in New Zealand. That's the New Zealand equivalent of the IRS, a place where nobody, if you're at a party, admits that they work, you know, that kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the knowledge management group inside of the IT group. So big IT, small knowledge, if you can imagine the difference. And they said, we need to find, and you know, we need a different story, we need to reposition ourselves. And so we worked on that for a while. What would their metaphor be? Because story and metaphor often ride together. And we worked out that they weren't the gatekeepers of information. In fact, who they were is kind of like the editorial board of the Lonely Planet Guide. And if you can imagine planet spelled P-L-A-N dash big I-T, then you know what kind of scope we have. That actually everybody in the organization is a stringer on the Lonely Planet Guide for the Inland Revenue Department. And what some, and you can get the Lonely Planet Guide as a section, as the full book, as a portion, as a download, as a printed document. There are many, many ways you can get that particular piece of information sliced and diced. But if people were stringers reporting on this bit of little bit of thing that happened to them rather than filling out onerous reports, how better would the information flow in the organization be? So we crafted a new story for them inside of the story that they were already in, which gave them a power of positioning that was quite different.
Mm.
So, you know, it's interesting to play with those kind of structures and say, okay, where do I need to go in? I don't know. One of them might be, who's the friendly? Who's friendly to this idea? And where might it really work and show some difference?
Thank you.
Any other final questions? Okay, hearing none. Mary Alice, thank you very much for not only your time on the call here and what is definitely a fascinating perspective, but also for that 19-page summary, including the case summary. If you haven't had a chance to read it, I know Tom sent that out a while back ago. I would highly encourage you to review it, especially, you know, I know I'm going to read it again after hearing Mary Alice share, because there's some things that I think I'm going to be able to glean from reading it a second time. And I'm very much looking forward to staying connected and hearing more. Any other comments, Tom, from you? Or?
No, I echo my thanks, Mary Alice, for taking the time to join us and share your insights. And, you know, for sharing your information and being part of, I guess it's the artofhosting.org is kind of an open source area, right? Yeah. So,
yes, the practitioner community is actually on artofhosting.ning.com, but you can sign up for the list on the website, the first one you mentioned. So there's many more resources for people who want to engage in participatory practice there too.
Yes, Yeah, I just love what you've brought. So often when people think of storytelling, they think of the story and the teller of the story, but you bring the participatory part of it into the listeners in really great ways to give them different ways to listen, to work on that art of listening, complete the circuit there. And I really thank you for sharing it with us.
You're very welcome.
Well, with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording so that we can appropriately save it for everybody else who would like to call in later.